In the small town of Nyamata, in eastern Rwanda, Martin Muyenzi points to the door of the small brick Catholic church.
As you can see, this door, it was broken. This is the original door. It was broken. People were trying to shut the door, and then, of course, it wasn't possible. Then the militias broke the door, and then they entered and started killing the people. Yeah, so we can go inside.
Inside the church, it's as if time has stood still. The church benches that make a semicircle around the altar are covered with piles of brown, ripped clothes. A sheet covers the altar. It's stained with blood. Rosary beads, a watch, wooden crosses, bullet holes in the ceiling, all remain as if the victims of this massacre are still somehow here, praying for their lives. At 7 a.m., April 10th, 1994, 10,000 men, women, and children were hiding in this church.
Even those who were trying to escape going outside were killed outside here.
The killers ringed the church with a fence to prevent escapes. Today, more than 40,000 Rwandans, genocide victims from across this province, are buried here. The past is especially present when one descends a staircase into a sunken crypt where skeletons of those victims are piled in the tiniest of rooms on plywood bookcases, floor to ceiling, no glass separating the visitor from the departed. There were no clergy present at the Nyamata church massacre, but at other churches around the country there were. Sometimes the clergy members were there bribing, negotiating for the lives of their parishioners, but at other churches they watched and even helped with the killing. Approximately 20 or so clergy have been brought to trial, be it in the international courts or the Rwandan community courts, called Gacaca. In 1994, more than 60% of Rwandans were Catholic, and in 2010, a Pew survey found similar results. Today, there is an uneasy tension when you mention the Catholic Church's history in Rwanda. Sergio Ramos is a guide at the Kigali Genocide Memorial Site. He was 13 years old in 1994 and remembers the day the militia came for his family.
They came in and they asked his ID cards. Then they say that we knew that you are Tutsi family and then you're going to die. So they say that you then have to kneel down and pray and then they're going to kill you. So my dad kneeled down and my mom came quickly and she kneeled alongside my dad and he started reciting this Catholic prayer.
Sergio says that was the last day in his family's house. He heard one of the soldiers say they would be back to kill them the next day. He and his family ran to their church. All over the country, many other Tutsis did the same when the genocide started. Sergio was an altar boy at the time and remembers seeing his priest that spring day, 18 years ago.
I thought that he was going to like protect us, but he was carrying a gun, a pistol.
Instead, the priest guarded his parishioners as prisoners.
The priest used to lead the mass even. So you see someone is leading the mass, and then after like a few hours, he's letting militias to come and select people and bring them outside of the church so you would hear them being hacked by machetes.
After a day of killing, the militias would retreat for the night and come back the next day for more.
Each and every day you count the day of like, tomorrow, maybe tomorrow I'll be killed or not.
Sergio remembers being trapped in that church for weeks. Today, Sergio lives in Kigali with his mother and sisters. His father and brother were among the hundreds murdered at his church. He works at the memorial site on one of Rwanda's many hillsides.
Yeah. This happened close to here.
Yeah. The church, you can see it. It's the church which is located on the upper side of the hill.
You can see that every day.
Yeah.
The church is about 100 yards from where Sergio now works, 6 days a week. His priest, who has never been held accountable for his role in the genocide, was one of dozens across Rwanda who are reported to have assisted the killers. The majority of Rwandan priests in 1994 were Tutsi, and many were killed, but 7 of the 9 bishops were Hutu, and the higher-ups in the church were closely aligned with the Hutu-led government, according to experts. In late May of 1994, the Vatican called for an end to the violence, but did not publicly acknowledge that the genocide was happening. It didn't affect the Rwandan archbishops. Many say it was too little, too late. In March of 1996, Pope John Paul II wrote a letter expressing his sorrow for the genocide, but exonerated the Catholic Church from the actions of the clergy who took part. Today, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame condemns the Vatican for failing to do more.
When I have seen the Catholic Church apologize to other crimes they have committed elsewhere, abusing children in churches in the United States, in Australia, in Ireland, and the Pope going out and apologizing. Fair enough. Some of these crimes really need apology. But when I see that being done and silence about the serious abuse in Rwandan society and during the genocide, when there's this silence, well, I always come back to the point that maybe these societies of ours are less important than other societies.
In the town of Elima, south of Kigali, young children are singing Catholic school songs. They're wearing American hand-me-downs, like Duke jerseys, turtlenecks, and frilly flower girl dresses.
This song is about John told Jesus, "This is Mary, she's your mother. This is the mother I'm leaving for you."
The kids are jumping and dancing, kicking up dust as they sing in a circle. They come here to sing and pray together, one teacher tells me. This is part of the Kutumeri Cooperative, a Catholic community center. Gloria Umtesa is a student teacher here. She lived and hid in this village in 1994. She's 20 years old and has been working at this co-op for 5 years. For a few minutes, she stands in the shade and explains how she teaches the history of the genocide.
The most question that children used to ask are, how did genocide happen? Who were killing? Who were killed?
Even though this is a Catholic-run center, Gloria says the church encourages the teachers to be honest with the children.
Before they teach the children, they go for the trainings and they tell them that it is good to say the truth. And the priest, they don't forbid them to teach the children. They allow them to explain everything that happened.
Gloria says they refer to the clergy who assisted the killers as the ugly Catholics. She says she speaks openly about the past. She tells her students the truth, and that gives her reason to believe that her church is on sturdy ground. I'm Mary Rose Madden for 88.1 WYPR.